The 707 slammed into the estate owned by the father of the tennis champion John McEnroe in the posh Long Island town of Oyster Bay. 73 of the 158 passengers aboard died. It took less than a day for the cause of the crash to be determined. Fuel exhaustion. There was nothing wrong with the aircraft. There was nothing wrong with the airport. The pilots weren't drunk or high. The plane had run out of gas. "It's a classic case," said Surin Ratwadi, a veteran pilot with Emirates Airlines, who has been involved for years in human factors research, which is the analysis of how human beings interact with complex systems like airplanes. Ratwadi is Sri Lankan, a lively man in his 40s who has been flying commercial jets his entire adult life. We were sitting in the lobby of the Sheraton Hotel in Manhattan. He had just landed an Emirates jumbo jet at Kennedy Airport after a long flight from Dubai. Ratwadi knew the Avianca case well. He began to tick off the typical crash preconditions. The nor'easter, the delayed flight, the minor technical malfunction with the autopilot, the three long holding patterns, when air traffic control required the plane to circle round and round, which meant not only 80 minutes of extra flying time, but extra flying at low altitudes, where a plane burns far more fuel than it does in the thin air high above the clouds. They were flying a 707, which is an older airplane and is very challenging to fly, Ratwadi said. That thing is a lot of work. The flight controls are not hydraulically powered. They are connected by a series of pulleys and pull rods to the physical metal surfaces of the airplane. You have to be quite strong to fly that airplane. You heave it around the sky. It's as much physical effort as rowing a boat. My current airplane, I fly with my fingertips. I use a joystick. My instruments are huge. Theirs were the size of coffee cups. And his autopilot was gone. So the captain had to keep looking around these nine instruments, each the size of a coffee cup, while his right hand was controlling the speed and his left hand was flying the airplane. He was maxed out. He had no resources left to do anything else. That's what happens when you're tired. Your decision-making skills erode. You start missing things, things that you would pick up on any other day. In the black box recovered from the crash site, Captain Kevietis, in the final hour of the flight, is heard to repeatedly ask for directions from ATC to be translated into Spanish, as if he no longer had the energy to make use of his English. On nine occasions, he also asked for directions to be repeated. "Tell me things louder," he said, right near the end. "I'm not hearing them." When the plane was circling for 40 minutes just southeast of Kennedy, when everyone on the flight deck clearly knew they were running out of fuel, the pilot could easily have asked to land at Philadelphia, which was just 65 miles away. But he didn't. It was as if he had locked in on New York. On the aborted landing, the plane's ground proximity warning system went off no less than 15 times, telling the captain that he was bringing in the plane too low. He seemed oblivious. When he aborted the landing, he should have circled back around immediately and didn't. He was exhausted. Through it all, the cockpit was filled with a heavy silence. Sitting next to Kevietis was his first officer, Maurizio Klotz, and in the flight recorder there were long stretches of nothing but rustling and engine noise. It was Klotz's responsibility to conduct all communication with ATC, which meant that his role that night was absolutely critical. But his behavior was oddly passive. It wasn't until the third holding pattern southwest of Kennedy Airport that Klotz told ATC that he didn't think the plane had enough fuel to reach an alternate airport. The next thing the crew heard from ATC was, "Just stand by," and, following that, "Clear to the Kennedy Airport."